Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man, it's toy department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. We're going to talk Oscars a little bit later on. Is this the last show we're doing, last pod before the awards?
I can't believe the Oscars are already here.
I know. Do you feel like there's a little less buzz about Oscars this year than maybe some other years?
Maybe. Maybe I'm a little checked out. I don't know.
I don't know if it's the, like, Me Too thing, or not necessarily Me Too so much as the, like, Harvey Weinstein's not around to whip up a fervor, you know what I mean, thing, or if it's just the sort of declining relevance of award shows in general, or if I'm just making it all up. But it seems like I've heard a lot less talk about the Oscars this year, or things like Oscar parties. Like, do you know anyone who's having an Oscar party?
No, but I barely have friends. I mean, I agree with that entire sentiment from the I am not sure if I'm making it up all the way through the feeling I have about less buzz.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm still very excited about the Oscars. And I have to say that this is the first year in a while that I've seen every Best Picture nominee. Usually I get pretty close. This year I got to all of them. So I'm pretty invested. So we'll have some picks.
Yeah, me later. Too. Later I also that. Did. There's only eight. I guess I do more often.
I have to say, this podcast helped. Like, we saw a lot of them just for this pod. So
yeah, but also, I mean, the only movie that has a nominee in any of the major categories, so from director through all the acting and Best Picture. The only movie with a nominee that I have not seen, I think there might be one more for you, but the only one for me is All the Money in the World, which feels like a Me Too nomination more than anyone actually seeing Christopher Plummer.
I heard he's great.
I'm sure he is great, but like I feel like that's more about like what he did and what everyone did in that situation than it is about his performance.
I mean, I would say almost more than Me Too, it's, I think he's probably getting some credit for like sort of jumping in there at the last minute.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like it's a hard job, and it was done under like admirable circumstances or however you want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's getting a lot of points for that. It's the movie I didn't see. I'm sure he's great. I'm just saying I don't think anybody saw that.
Isn't FX doing a TV show about like the Getty kidnapping as well?
Yes.
It's so weird.
It is weird.
I didn't see, and I'm sure we'll get into this when we get into the awards. I didn't see Romy right. J. Israel Esquire, and I didn't see
but
the Florida Project.
Saw everything else.
Did you see the Florida Project?
Yeah. Oh, you didn't see the Florida Project?
No. I've heard it's great, though. I'll watch it at some point.
It's another intense movie that can be tough to watch at times, especially when you know the circumstances surrounding it. But Willem Dafoe's very good.
Yeah, but probably not good enough to win the Best Supporting Actor, but we'll get there later.
That seems to be I would think he'd be the fourth most likely to win.
Let's jump to the homework because we're out there trying stuff. This week on both sides. I asked you to check out two more episodes of AP Bio. We talked about it last week. How I thought the first episode was kind of just okay and was doing a lot of pilot work and seemed a little bit perfunctory performance-wise from Glenn Howerton and Patton Oswalt. But I did think the show found a voice somewhat in the second and third episodes. And so I'm curious to see, now that you've watched those two, if you have some agreement on that.
I have some agreement on that. I think you're right that the first episode did a lot of pilot work and the second and third were better and more entertaining and funnier more consistently. But I couldn't stop thinking about how you said you. I think this is much better than the Mick, and I just that it is the Mick. I just think maybe you haven't seen the right episodes of the Mick.
It's possible, like, because I definitely still think it's much better than the Mick.
Like, it has it's funny. It's legitimately funny, but it is very sort of one note, and it is very much we've taken more or less taken the character from Always Sunny and spun it into a sitcom that network can handle because it's just one person like this instead of an entire show of people like this.
Yeah, I get the sense that there's going to be a Michael Shore-esque sort of broadening of all of the characters in this world. Like, I think we're going to really like to get to know these students.
But that happens.
And some of the weirdos in the school, you know? Not saying that doesn't happen on the Mick, but...
It happens to a degree on the Mick, and I guess it remains to be seen whether this show gets a little deeper and more thoughtful. I mean, when you say Michael Shore, that's a very high bar, and it's hard for me to even think of anyone besides Michael Shore who's reached it.
I did say Michael Shore-esque.
I know, but I'm saying, like, that's like saying Michael Jordan-esque. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's like,
but
what?
You would call Harold Miner Michael Jordan-esque, right? You know what I mean? You're not calling Harold Miner Michael Jordan. The reason you put the esque in there is to give yourself a little buffer between the real thing.
But my point is the Mick is Harold Miner, you know?
Yeah.
If AP Bio
this
is
Vince
Kobe
Carter.
Bryant.
This is like, yeah. All right, Kobe Bryant. There you go.
but then that's great, but I don't know that it hasn't been Kobe Bryant yet.
No, it's Vince Carter, right?
I guess we'll find out.
All right.
I guess we'll find out. It's not bad. And like, if you're asking, am I a little more sucked in after three episodes? I am. I don't know if that's just because I'm naturally sucked into any reasonably decent storytelling over time. Like, that's my curse to bear. Cross to bear?
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, it's not bad. It's funny. Glenn Howerton's funny. Patton Oswalt is funny. The kids are funny. The lady who stepped in to teach health class and talked a lot about her vagina was funny.
Yep.
It's a funny show.
You know where the show got me? There was a moment where the show got me where the guy was standing with the saxophone ready to do the solo from, was that Dreamweaver? That did.
Yes.
Baker Street. Yeah, Baker Street. That's what it is.
Baker Street.
Yeah. I really like. Once
he
I really,
says it.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just going to play Baker Street if I see somebody coming. And he gets like three notes in and she's already in the office. It's pretty funny. It was a funny gag.
Yeah. And like, you know, and I think I did mention this last week. I really loved the bond that Glenn Howerton forms with like the tickler teacher.
Yes, the tickler teacher bond is very good. I mean, look,
it gets
again,
weird. The show gets weird sometimes. And that excites me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But to me, it's in the same category as the Mick at this point for me. And if there's something else there, you're seeing something I'm not quite seeing.
All right, fair enough. I don't know if I'm going to say I feel vindicated, but I feel good about what
it's funny. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with watching this show.
Yeah, and I will continue to watch it. You may not. But I'm down.
We'll see. It's about to get real crowded, as we'll discuss later.
yeah, it's gonna. All right. Should we talk about iZombie?
I would like to. Yes. So here's what I'll say before you speak, because it didn't occur to me. I did not think about the plot line before having you just watch the fourth season premiere, and. Boy, are there a lot of strings to pick up. Also, and this is probably the most interesting thing. Well, there's two things. One is an element that I'm sure you eventually picked up on, but that is so de rigueur by the fourth season that they don't really explain it at all conceptually, is that part of being a zombie in the world of iZombie is when you eat someone's brain, you sort of have a psychic connection to them. You have visions of their memories and whatnot. And so the main character has been using that over the course of time to solve crimes. The other thing that's really noteworthy is that zombies were completely, what's the word? Undercover, underground, unknown, until like 5 episodes ago. So the show you watched, which is about zombies integrating, essentially, after several violent incidents, is a pretty different show than the first 2.5 seasons or so.
Okay.
That being said, a lot of the same heart and comedy remains.
I'm very glad that you issued that caveat, because definitely one of the things I would say about this show is that I had no idea what the F was going on for a lot of it.
And I wish I had explained some of that ahead of time, because like, it didn't occur to me till I was midway through that there were certain things that got picked up and not explained because they're so deeply embedded in the core of the show that it seems obvious at this point.
Yeah.
And it was only me thinking about you watching it that made that stuff occur to me.
So, you know, a lot of times we do this dance, sort of where like you'll recommend something and I'll be kind of like, I don't know, man. And then you'll sell me on a little bit and then I watch it and I really enjoy it. This was not one of those times for me.
Yeah, I do wonder if it would be different if it had been like the season 2 or 3 premiere or even like the first 5 episodes of the series or something, because it's just a very different show right now. And I feel like if you didn't have the buy-in to the characters and the development of the characters already, it'd be really hard to even to figure out what was going on, much less enjoy it.
Yeah, I did think of that at some point. Obviously, I'm like, well, maybe I should have, maybe I really need to be watching from the beginning. I will say there was a lot of others, I think it's sort of compounded maybe by the Rob Thomas type of dialogue where there's a lot of quick repartee.
Yes, it definitely is that.
So, when you don't really know what's going on, it's hard to follow. And like the one-liners, even when I get the one-liners, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not quite Amy Sherman Palladino, but it's like on that road.
Yeah. I just thought the show was, too clever. Too clever by half isn't even really like by like 5 times. it was like it reminded me like the I don't know, like I just seemed like everybody was like an off-brand version of people from better Rob Thomas shows. It was like off-brand Kirsten Bell, and there was the one guy from Veronica Mars, who was
yes,
cool to
Duncan
see, but like, yeah.
From Veronica Mars plays a yeah. So
there's like off brand Dev Patel is in the show, and like off brand, And I'm like, I don't know.
To give you an idea, so here's why I think it would have been better to start from the beginning in retrospect, and maybe in a year we'll do that. Is that essentially, first of all, the lead character, who I never remember the actress's name, but the character is Olivia, Liv Moore, hilariously. First of all, this comes from a graphic novel, so some of that stuff is graphic novel related, cleverness. But also, she has earned better than off-brand Veronica Mars over 3 years of episodes. Like, I feel very comfortable saying that what felt like off-brand Veronica Mars here is actually something. It's actually like the elevator pitch is zombie Veronica Mars, but the character is different and an individual and entertaining and has sort of earned her place. And also, like, although there are common elements, in, especially the cleverness of the dialogue, like, in the same way that Veronica Mars, the character building and sort of intrigue earned the, like, wink at her cheesy, clever quips, I think iZombie has done that by the 4th season, which, by the way, is more than Veronica Mars ever had.
Correct. I believe that's correct. Yeah.
No, it's definitely correct.
It's also more than Party Down would ever have, but I'd much rather watch either one of those shows.
Well, right. So I guess what I'm saying is I think if you had experienced this from the beginning, it would rise to more of like a B+, if not A- Veronica Mars, as opposed to like a C, confusing, overly clever Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say C-. Even.
Yeah, so it is. I do think, like, in retrospect, it's a show that you've got to be in on from the early seasons to sort of you have to have seen the character development to have respect for what's happening with the characters.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was definitely planning to take a shit all over that, and you definitely mitigated that some. So
that's good.
So I appreciate the context at the very least, and I'll try not to be angry that. Rob Thomas isn't writing a Party Down movie so that he can work on this.
Oh, I'm sure he's got time, dude. It's season four now. I'm not sure he's even show running anymore.
Like, all right. That's good. That's good. Man, it was more Seahawks jokes than I was prepared for.
Yeah, there were several Seahawks. Although there's plenty of Seattle humor across. Like, this was a particularly Seahawks heavy. Also, like, you have to understand, like, and again, this is a black box for someone who's never seen it, but just to give you context, like, the Indian doctor's odd behavior is totally unique to the last, like, three episodes. He was just, I mean, he was always funny and participating in the sort of cover-up, but there was none of the weird, like, that was
I did get a sense of that. I did not think
of the main character.
He was normally walking around in the nude, per se.
Yeah, or like, or just, like, being so silly and weird and, like, overly clever.
Yeah. All right. So I guess it's sort of a similar situation in the reverse, right, with the next show that we're going to talk about, which is Top Chef.
Well, I went back to the beginning of this season.
You did. And by the way, I did not ask you to do that. I was, you know, just saying,
you were like, just pick a couple, basically.
I was like, I was going to say, watch the last one that aired at the time that we had spoken,
right,
and then the one that was airing this week, and I think you'd be fine.
Once I see, so here was my thought process. When I enjoy reality shows, reality competitions in particular, it's usually because I find entertainment and value in, like, watching the people and rooting for or against them. And, like, what I didn't realize prior to a week ago is that these people all live in a house together. So, like, when you said watch Top Chef, I was like, what am I watching? Okay. Oh, it's chefs in a house. Interesting. And it's heading into, like, the finals, basically.
Yeah.
So I was like, clearly there's, like, a lot of character buy-in here to sort of understand the appeal of the show.
Yeah, no, you did the right thing. I wouldn't ask you to watch from the beginning because I wouldn't ask you to invest 12 hours of television time into something that you didn't, you know, that you wouldn't necessarily be sure that you would like.
Well, luckily I had a very lazy weekend, so worked out well.
But it is, you know, and I do think part of the joy as well in this show, and it's definitely certainly one of the things that sets it apart from, like, a Chopped, where, you know, you just have people on for 30 minutes and, you know, and then they're gone. Is
right.
The evolution of these people as chefs over the course of this competition. And you do see chefs who find their voice or figure out how to step up their game.
Or become, like, the most horrible asshole you have ever seen.
Right, that happens too, yeah. Or the competition really gets to them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So,
yeah, the lady from Alaska simply couldn't hack it.
Yeah, you know.
From a competition standpoint. Like, I'm sure she's a wonderful chef. But right. I have, like I mentioned, I don't remember if it was on or off air. I have a page of scribbled notes here.
Yeah, hit me.
Just about, some of them are things I liked or whatever. Some of them are just random thoughts. I would start by saying Padma. I got most of my, like, toxically masculine thoughts about her in off the air, which I feel is good. But I do want to know, and I don't know if it's appropriate to ask, about that badass monster scar on her arm, because it kind of looks like, you know, it was from her, like, street fighting days, and she got knifed. Like, I hope it's not something upsetting or painful to her in any horrible way. I don't mean to pry, but it does intrigue me. Secondly, some characters on the show. First of all, I have eaten at three of the restaurants that come up between here in the Bay and in Chicago. I think I probably ate at Spiaggia before Big Joe was there. Mm.
I just want to interject really quick.
Please.
Car accident is the answer to the
car accident.
Car accident. Wow. when she was a teenager.
Oh man, yeah. That must have been gruesome, because that thing is just it's got to be 6 inches long. It's like her whole bicep.
Yep, she fractured her right hip and shattered her right arm. And the surgery left a 7-inch scar between her elbow and shoulder.
7-inch scar.
There you go.
Yeah, well, it just, like, adds to her aura, is my point. It's like, yes, she's one of the most beautiful people you've ever seen in your life. She's incredibly, like, and I realize it's cut, but it doesn't, like, having spoken and been edited, you can only edit so much, and she is, like, never flustered or off her game. She's funny in a weird deadpan way. She's also, like, exacting and precise and serious about the whole thing. She's just very impressive. Anyway.
100%. And you can't fake that over, I don't even know, God knows how many
15
seasons.
15 seasons.
Yeah, at this point. So, and I will also say they've had iterations of Top Chef, you know, Top Chef Masters or whatever, where they have had other people who are not Padma host, and you see right away how much she brings to the table. Even when the other ones are okay, like, she's the GOAT. She's great. And that has nothing to do with the hormonal parts of of our occasional reaction to her.
So, no, because as we discussed, like, there are times when she is distracting physically from what's happening on the show. She's amazing. Anyway. Back to the people. So I have eaten several times, actually. Just most recently when my father was in town at Brown Sugar Kitchen, where Tanya Holland, I believe is her last name, is the chef. And then I've eaten once each at the much fancier Quince in San Francisco, where Mustache Joe now cooks, or did cook recently.
I've also eaten at Quince. Quince is great.
Yeah, it's really good. And so is Spiaggia. It's phenomenal. Although, again, I think I was probably there before other Joe. Mustache Joe is cast in many ways as a villainous character in the early going, in part just because of his mustache, I think, but also because he's a little douchey, and he remains a little douchey, but...
I love Mustache Joe.
I've got to say,
I'm all in on Mustache Joe.
I came around on Mustache Joe. He's tough. And this is another. OK, so this is a broader thought. I should have said this before I got into any of the individuals. This show in general is perfect for a reality situation, because 95% of chefs fall into one of two basic personality types. Either a sort of caring, nurturing giver who just wants to feed and take care of everybody, or these very exacting, precise, difficult, strong-willed people. And like, almost everyone in this house falls into one of those two categories. Maybe one or two are a little more interesting. Well, they're all very interesting, but one or two are, like, not broadly in those categories. And so watching those two types interact and clash is phenomenal. And Mustache Joe clearly is the precise, exacting personality type, but you come to learn he really does have a lot of heart, and he really just wants to do a good job and learn, and he's not a total schmuck. So that has been a tremendous journey for me.
And he can also really cook, by the way. Like, he's
oh yeah,
good.
No, he seems to be from the beginning has seemed to be one of, if not the best.
Yeah.
And most creative chefs. Both of the Joes, actually, I would say that about. Okay. Some other personalities on the show. I am very sad about what happened in the most recent episode, which I did catch up to yesterday.
Spoiler alert, for, I guess. If you have
spoiler alert, if you don't know the results and are planning to watch, but hopefully, I mean, it was 5 days ago or something like that, I think. I was Team Carrie, man. I was full on Team Carrie. Like, this local woman who definitely falls into the caring, nurturer personality type, mm-hmm. and definitely was was less fancy than almost everyone there, and leaned into her own style from the beginning, and was like, "Hey, man, I make awesome toast, and that's okay yep. on Top Chef because it's awesome."
Right.
And she won challenges with toast like 3 times, and it was amazing.
And like the other chefs would get so mad.
I know. I love that. I absolutely love that. And so I was Team Carrie. I was very sad to see her go home in the sort of semifinals.
She won me over. There's an episode where they're like camping, and she makes an oven out of a hole
yes.
in the snow and then bakes the a perfect dish. Cake. Like,
yeah.
Like,
she cooks the best, like, upside down cake yeah. in tin can mugs.
Are you kidding
in
me?
A hole in the ground.
On the side of a mountain. Yeah. It's like, it's amazing.
In like a foot of snow. It was phenomenal. And just in general, she was probably the most consistently positive and likable and like, although definitely not the domineering type, able to stand up to them at least a little bit, you know, because some of the people who are more the caring nurturer just are trodden upon by these domineering psychopath chefs.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that can happen.
They just like clearly can't hold their own. Even Bruce, who seems to be like maybe the most qualified. Not, they're all very qualified, to be clear. But seemed to be maybe the most acclaimed of the folks there.
Yeah, I guess he had the best resume going in.
Yeah, there you go. Best CV, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, he was definitely more the nurturer type and was overwhelmed at times by the competition and the intensity and the time limits and just, like, couldn't yeah. quite find himself.
And his ability to make things other than pasta.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that was interesting to watch. Claudette. This lady is unbelievable. And I would say in general, the level of reckless trash talking in the like one-on-one on camera deals, yeah. it's pretty phenomenal. Like, you know, these people are going to see this, and Claudette in particular, but really everybody at one point or another, with the possible exception of the sad Alaskan lady, just like, threw shots at others
yeah,
for
a lot of
no
shade.
Reason
a lot of shade.
Aggressively.
I, you know, the Claudette bugged me a little bit on because on her way out the door, I think it was her second time on the way
every
out the door.
Time she threw someone under the bus, every time she was on the bottom, she threw somebody under the bus.
Her last appearance on the show, when, like, you know, they're doing the I've packed my knives you know, epilogue, essentially.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I guess if they want a vanilla Top Chef.
Yeah, she tried to make it like...
And I was like, whoa, dogs. First of all, Butterfunk, you know, Amish Soul Food, Chris is still over there cooking, man. So, like, settle down.
And
we got Fatima.
Way, like,
we've got, you know...
Mustache Joe might be white and a bit of a frat boy, but he is not a vanilla
Agreed.
Top chef.
Agreed.
Like, Agreed. Carrie might be white and from Colorado and cooking simple things, but she would not have been a vanilla Top Chef. That's asinine.
Yeah. And it's also not the history of the show. Like, you know what I mean?
The whole show is a body of work here. It's a diverse tapestry, and I don't think anybody else of all the eliminated chefs would even have begun to suggest that anything besides merit played a part in it.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. So yeah, that bummed me out quite a bit. This is why this show is great. Like, they cast it well, and I would say, in terms of the quality of chefs of this group, it's actually on the lower end, I think, of some of the casts that they've had. As good as the food is right now, I mean, they have had some real stars. The most recent episode, right, you saw the Voltaggio brothers.
I did.
Who are, I don't know how familiar you are with them, but Michael Voltaggio did Inc. in L.A. It's one of my favorite restaurants in America. I haven't eaten at his brother's restaurant, but it's supposed to be just as great. Those two guys were in the same season together early on, and there are some people who are like, you know, the Richard Blazes and the whatever. There have been some, like, legitimately, like, you know, legendary cast members of this show, and I don't know that we're going to have anybody quite like that this season. But the show is cast so well. The concept, too, I think, of just the chef world, kind of like you said, like, there you have egos, you're going to have conflict, but it's all underpinned by a respect. Like, I think even though there's some trash talking about a dish here or a dish there, or even maybe a chef here or a chef there, there's almost always respect for other people's ability.
Well, that's what's so incredible about the trash talk, is that they clearly do respect each other's ability. Like, by the third time Carrie is winning with toast, Mustache Joe is literally over here in the one-on-one being like, this bitch made toast again. Yeah. No way she can win with toast again. And then she wins, and he's like, God damn it, she won with toast again. And you're like, bro, don't you know you're on camera?
It's great. It's great. And, you know, I think the show is also, it's you know, it's got its rhythm now. It's figured out how to work in the personal stories of the contestants in a way that you just don't get on a lot of other cooking competition shows. Maybe you get them on some other competition shows. But, you know, this is generally, like, this is why I said it's the best of reality TV. You have genuinely talented people, and the show is put together in a really great way. And, yeah, I love it. I watch it every year. I can't wait for it to come on.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you because I have two important things I want to address with you. One is a complaint that's not entirely a complaint. My only complaint, which is not entirely a complaint. And the second is what I feel sort of to be an inevitability. First of all, I will say that maybe more so than any other reality show I've ever enjoyed, the music and foreshadowing shots make it pretty predictable. Like, very rarely does Padma say, so and so, pack your knives and go, and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, there's been There's been less of that this year, for sure.
That is more this season than others.
You know, one thing they will have done to their credit, like, it was sort of legendary. It used to be that when you got they started showing pictures of your family, like you were going home. You know what I mean?
So yeah, but even now, there's some where it's like it's like the dish we liked the most, and they show like two chefs smiling and one looking really intense, and you're like, I just know exactly what's going on here. And like the music swells at exactly the right moment, and it's like you're so it does, but it's almost like this sort of over the top dramatic thing that I don't totally not enjoy, which is why I say it's barely a complaint. Yeah. Like, it's still fun, but it's definitely, you know, there's plenty of predictable reality shows. Of the ones I've actually enjoyed, this is by far the most predictable.
And there are some other things too, you know, over the course of the show, like traditions, you know, like, it's pretty, like, people are like getting knocked out from making risotto is like kind of a pretty famous thing, to the point that the chefs now are aware of it and will occasionally address it. So,
or even like that toast thing I mentioned, like, that was real. Like, by the third time they show Mustache Joe being like, this bitch can't win with toast again. You're like, obviously she's going to win with toast again. You know what I mean? Like, those sorts of things are very, they're telegraphed passes. Like, we're playing five-year-olds, so it's okay. We're still dunking, but like, you're telegraphing the pass. I'm not mad at you exactly, but you are doing that.
Yeah.
Here's the second thing. Clearly we now are a Top Chef podcast. Yes.
We
have to react now to each subsequent episode of Top Chef on a weekly basis, even if it's just 5 minutes of the podcast, like Pod Chef. Like, we'll just have a segment called Pod Chef.
I'm all in on that. There's only two more episodes this year, so.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying now we're in for those, and we're probably in on next year, too, right?
Sure. And by the way, I would recommend to you, if you can get your hands on any past seasons, like.
Oh, believe me, that is next.
All right.
Although, as you'll discover later in the podcast, maybe not super next, because March is going to be a doozy.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's jump into Oscars and then we can get into March. Does that sound good?
Okay. All right. Great.
So we've got some ground to cover. I think we're just going to do the typical should win, will win sort of format here.
Let's just blast it out.
All right. Do you want to start? You want to start from the bottom and work our way up to Best Picture?
Started from the bottom. I don't care.
All right. Let's
what do you
that.
Think? What's the right way to do it? Should we do it in Oscar order? What is it, like lead act or Oscar supporting actor weird. First?
Supporting actress, I think, usually goes first. But let's start there. Why not? All right. So your nominees are Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, Allison Janney for I, Tonya, Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird, and Octavia Spencer for Being Octavia Spencer. And she did that in The Shape of Water. All right. I can go first here. I think Allison Janney is going to win.
Yes.
And I don't have a problem with that because I think she was very good, but I'm going to say that Laurie Metcalf should win.
I agree entirely. I would say my third favorite in the category was Mary J, and then Leslie Manville, and then Octavia Spencer, who was great as Octavia Spencer, but we've talked about how we'd like to see her do other things, which is not at all her fault.
Starring Octavia Spencer as Octavia Spencer.
And she's great in that role, but like, give her a chance to do something else, Hollywood, please.
Yeah, I'd switch Leslie Manville and Mary J, but I otherwise totally agree. All right, best supporting actor.
Mm-hmm.
Willem Dafoe, Florida Project, which we talked about earlier, I hadn't seen. Woody Harrelson, Three Billboards. Richard Jenkins, The Shape of Water. Shouts to Richard Jenkins, by the way, who is typically awesome in so many things. Christopher Plummer, All the Money in the World. And then Sam Rockwell, outside Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Who's your pick there?
So this is really hard for me because I think the Three Billboards guys are most likely to win. But if I'm really going to dig in on this, like I said, I haven't seen Christopher Plummer, so I'm putting him on the bottom just because I think the rest were all very good. Sam Rockwell and Woody Harrelson, while both great, both did things I know about. You know, they did things in their tool bag, their normal everyday tool bag. Richard Jenkins, you know, his tool bag is so, diverse historically. It's harder to say that, but he was phenomenal. And Willem Dafoe, I don't know that you've seen Willem Dafoe like this before, and that affects me. I also don't know that you've quite seen a movie like this before. And while it wasn't the best picture of the year for me by any standard, it was one of the more interesting ones, and it was incredibly moving. So I think I would give it to Willem Dafoe with an honorable mention to Richard Jenkins, but I do expect one of the Three Billboards guys to win, probably Rockwell.
Yeah, I think Rockwell takes this one going away. I would give it to Woody, with the caveat that I've only seen 60% of this category. So Christopher Plummer and Willem Dafoe could have been awesome. But I thought Woody really shined in that movie.
He was great, but I do think it was more in his wheelhouse than what Willem Dafoe did. That's really the only they were all four of those guys were so good to me. Richard Jenkins, Rockwell, Harrelson, and Dafoe, that I just give Dafoe the edge because I feel like it was a side of him I haven't quite seen more so than the others.
I think for Woody it was a little bit of shading. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Like to me it was, I wouldn't say I've seen him play that guy exactly before, But I've seen him play guys who weren't that far off. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
But the movie doesn't work without his like decency, though. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. But here's what I'm saying, and maybe I should have given more to the Willem Dafoe description. In The Florida Project, Willem Dafoe plays a sort of, in many ways, normal, although there's clearly he's had some things in his past that you don't necessarily know too much about, but he's got his own issues that he, but he's sort of a more normal human feeling character than I think you usually see him play, and a guy trying to navigate like how to do this job with compassion but also do his job. I mean, it's just, it's a really deep, subtle role that I think a lot of times Willem Dafoe, because of the way he looks, is cast in some extreme.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it. Can't argue.
So, yeah. I'm just trying to say what, because again, I don't disagree that Woody was fantastic. I thought Richard Jenkins was also fantastic. And Sam Rockwell is probably the one of all of them who's the most just doing his thing. But his thing is great.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, I often think he's great. I don't know. This is a tough category.
Everything I've seen was very good.
But he's going to win. All right, Dad, let's jump to
he's going to win.
Let's jump to the writing categories, which are where basically they nominate the movies that are too cool to win Oscars, typically. That's right.
Uh-huh.
Like when you like a movie and you think it's really an achievement, but you know that the Academy's not ready for it, if they're going to win anything, it's screenplay. So adapted screenplay, you've got Call Me By Your Name, The Disaster Artist, see what I mean? Logan, Molly's Game, and Mudbound.
Now, I have not seen Molly's Game.
Nor have I, and I suspect it probably has a great script because that's Sorkin's movie.
Yes, but it's also probably very Sorkin-y, which again, to me, is like, when you do your thing it's great, that's great, but I'm not sure I want to give you an Oscar.
I guess, but his thing, like, you know, The Newsroom is very different from The Social Network to me.
Fair enough. I would say the thing they share the most is script writing, but
fair enough. You know, I think Call Me By Your Name is going to win.
Agreed. I think it's probably my least favorite.
Yeah, I'd probably go with The Disaster Artist for me on this one.
Yeah, this is, it's tough for me to separate screenplay from story in this. Because I guess if you're talking adapted screenplay, screenplay is less the
story. About the
story,
yeah.
And more the words, in which case I would probably agree with you that The Disaster Artist was. But if I'm thinking about story, I really thought Logan was fantastic.
Yeah.
And a well-written script, but just such an interesting way to tell a superhero story. But I do think a lot of that is cribbed from Old Man Logan. And I don't know if that's Scott Frank, and that's why he gets the credit. I don't know exactly how that works. But I think I'm probably with you, The Disaster Artist, and also with you that Call Me By Your Name would win. I do like Mudbound as a dark horse, because I think they're going to want to find a way to award that movie.
This is this next category I think is crazy tough. Original screenplay.
Probably the hardest for me. Yeah. I can't, like, The Shape of Water doesn't belong here, but...
But it's got a good chance to win.
It does. And same with Three Billboards. It's a great script. It doesn't belong here. It's not even Martin McDonagh's best script. But those other three, I don't know how I pick.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them are going to win.
Since we didn't say the movies, The Big Sick, Get Out, and Lady Bird are the other three.
I think Get Out has a chance just because of the sort of public support that I think it will have in some ways. The Big Sick is a perfect screenplay in my eyes. I mean, I just don't know how it could have been a better screenplay, and I would say exactly the same thing about Lady Bird. And Get Out, while I didn't think, like, this is a silly, nitpicky thing to say, I didn't think it was as word for word quite as perfect to me as the others. The story is to me the thing there.
Well, and, you know, from a script standpoint, it's also really funny. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a great script
in the middle of all these other things happening, which I think is something of an achievement. It's probably the funniest of these five movies, and I think The Big Sick is very funny as well. So
I don't know if it's the funniest. The Big Sick, I think, was again, it was just perfect to me. And again, Get Out. Like, this is nitpicking. This is a high level nitpick because I literally don't know how to choose between these three screenplays. I think if I had to vote, I think I would go with The Big Sick simply because, to me, that's the one of those top three where the words themselves make the most difference, and it is the screenplay category. But, like, it's not... I'm basically choosing out of a hat.
Yeah. I'm going to say Get Out will win. And
really? I hope you're right, in a way.
I think that's going to be the consolation prize it gets. Would be
yeah, because it's probably not getting Best Picture.
Yeah. Although, look, it's not out of the question. But, I don't think it will. So I'm going to say that, and I refuse to say that it shouldn't win, but I will say that I would vote for Lady Bird, personally.
I think what ends up happening is a bunch of people like us split three ways between those and Three Billboards wins.
Shape of Water. Yeah, I can see. All right, let's jump to directing.
Do you want to look at cinematography?
We can look at it. Sure, you got a pick there. I hadn't even really considered it yet. Cinematography. Sorry, I gotta. I jumped around a little bit here.
I can give you the five. It's Blade Runner, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Mudbound, and The Shape of Water.
Of course, now I found it. As you know, I hated Dunkirk as an film experience, but that I think that will and should win for cinematography.
I think it will. I would say it's the third best in the category.
Interesting.
Behind Shape of Water and Blade Runner. Blade Runner was even worse than Dunkirk, because instead of having no story, it had a confusing, nonsensical story. But I think that makes us forget that, and the sort of recency bias makes us forget quite how spectacular that movie looked.
Well, and Roger Deakins is the cinematographer there, and he's a legend. So,
I mean, that was the way Blade Runner 2049 looked was a marvel, even more so than Dunkirk, which was beautiful but not as impressive.
All right, directing. So we've got Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Jordan Peele for Get Out. How amazing is that? I mean, you know what I mean? Just the fact that that's a thing that could be happening is awesome. Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird. Kind of feel the same way. Paul Thomas Anderson, who I believe is getting his first nomination for this, or is it a second?
He must have been nominated for There Will Be Blood, right?
I don't know. He had to have been. He had to have been, right? That movie got a lot of Oscar love.
I would think so.
Anyway, he's in that category as well. And who else do we got? Oh, Shape of Water is the last one. This is another tough category. Where are you going with this? I'm just going to say I think Guillermo del Toro will win. Is what I think will win.
You think what?
I think Guillermo del Toro will win. I don't know about. I don't think he should win. In fact, I definitely don't think he should win. And I'm going to knock out Christopher Nolan in this because I didn't enjoy Dunkirk.
I don't know how you win Best Director for a movie with no story or character development.
But
it's not a movie. Yeah. You directed an art film. It's not.
Yeah, well, you look at the Academy.
It's like you directed Planet Earth. If Dunkirk is nominated, Planet Earth should win every category.
I think it's going to be really hard to pick between the other three. For me personally, with that vote, I could vote for any of them.
Yeah, I would include Del Toro. I think all four of those are spectacularly directed movies. And I don't know whether to give it to the person who impressed me the most because I didn't know what they were capable of, or the person who I just think is the best director. The latter being Paul Thomas Anderson, I think, is the best director of the bunch. Phantom Thread, I think we talked about how much we liked it and how directory all his movies are, really. You know, I mean, that's part of it.
He has been nominated before, but he's never won.
On the other hand, I mean, what Jordan Peele did with Get Out is unbelievable and phenomenal. Greta Gerwig made a perfect movie. And I just thought The Shape of Water was beautiful. And again, very directory, very, very filmy. You know what I mean? It's just these visual sequences that delivered emotion. And
yeah, I thought it was a little overly filmy, to be honest.
Yeah. I hear you.
A little bit.
And
look at us. We're not into classic cinema. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's his style. You know, he's over the top. He's always like that.
Here's classy fish sex.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought it was a beautifully executed love story. Yes, fantastical. Yes, artsy, and maybe a little bit much to swallow for some, but I thought it worked.
This is one I really think
he's right in there for me. I don't know how to choose. You know, I guess maybe I'd give it to Jordan Peele.
We're gonna want to. Well, The Shape of Water is gonna win a bunch of stuff, and we're gonna want to walk it back. And it's a much better movie than The Artist. I'm not trying to compare
them. Don't do that. Don't compare it to The Artist.
But we're gonna have that same kind of regret.
I don't
think
so.
That's all I'm saying. About Shape of Water, we're gonna be like, really, the fish sex movie.
See, but that's that. Just because there's an easy reductive way to refer to it doesn't make it not worthy.
It's not like I'm not here to say it's a bad film. It's just not as good as some of these other films. All right.
I don't think The Shape of Water. Excuse me. I don't think The Shape of Water is as good a film as Get Out, Lady Bird, or Phantom Thread. I think there's an argument to be made that the direction is equal. That's all.
Yeah, fine. Okay. I don't know if I agree, but I would not take you to the wall on that. All right, let's go to best actress. You got Sally Hawkins, Frances McDormand, Margot Robbie, Saoirse Ronan, and Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm.
I think we agree Frances McDormand is going to win.
We do.
I should win. Man, this is another tough one. I sort of want to give it to Saoirse Ronan. I actually think this is sort of one time where Meryl Streep is getting slept on a little bit, and I don't mind because she's won for so many things, and some of them maybe she hasn't even totally deserved.
She deserves to be slept on here. I just think, again, of all these people, Meryl Streep by far the most just showed up and did a Meryl Streep thing and then went home. Like, it never felt like heavy lifting to me.
Ooh,
as good as she is.
I disagree, man. I really thought, like, everything the movie had to say about women and feminism and, like, it all hinges on her character evolution through the course of that 2 hours.
Okay, fine. But again, like, that's the storytelling to me, not some noteworthy Meryl Streep acting performance.
But it's the execution of the storytelling. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's fine to have that in the story, but it doesn't work if you don't. All right.
Okay, no. Again, this is not me saying Meryl stinks. She's great. It's like LeBron. If he has his like eighth best season, even if really it probably is about as good as anyone else that year, I don't want to give him the MVP because it.
I get it. Know. That's that was kind of the point I'm making. Do you have any problem with Frances McDormand winning? I don't
know
because really.
I love her deeply and I like that movie very much, but she would be my next least favorite after Meryl Streep.
I thought she was kind of just doing her thing, to be honest.
Yeah,
her thing
is super
compelling, but
yes, and a little rawer and more interesting to me than Meryl's thing. But again, that's why those two are on the bottom, not because they're not great, but because that's just them doing their thing. To me, Sally Hawkins was fantastic. But the best two are definitely Saoirse and Margot. And honestly, I think if we're honest, Margot Robbie is clearly the best actress of the year in a leading role. What she did was really phenomenal. Whatever else you have to say about that movie and the way it handles facts and the cartoonishness of it at times, she became Tonya Harding pretty convincingly. Yeah, maybe a little too attractive, but what's she supposed to do about that? She, I thought, was the one who had the most transformative, impressive acting performance of all of these. As much as I like Saoirse Ronan, who is in virtually every shot of that movie and very, very good.
I am a strong disagree with everything you just said. I
really?
never forgot she was Margot Robbie. I thought she was game and it was an admirable performance, but I think she's easily the fifth best performance in this category. Easily to me.
Wow. Yeah. I'm so surprised. I thought
she's
she
like
was
the
great.
One I was like, all right, I can't even. Let's just knock her right out of the back.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no shots. Like I said, she was really game and, you know, you could tell the story meant something to her. But I just don't. I don't think her performance is the caliber of any of these other four.
Okay. I certainly wouldn't be mad at you for voting for Saoirse Ronan or Sally Hawkins or any of them. Yeah. But
it doesn't matter
because
Frances McDormand's going to win. All right.
Yeah.
Best actor, we've got Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name. Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread, Daniel Kaluuya, excuse me, for Get Out, Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour, Denzel Washington for being Denzel Washington. I know
they're all really great again. You know, they really are. Gary Oldman's probably going to win. Daniel Day-Lewis probably should win, but I wouldn't be upset at any of them. They're all great. Denzel probably has the least chance, and that's probably appropriate. Just nobody saw that movie.
It's an honor to be nominated guy of this group, yeah.
I don't think he feels that way, but sure.
Right. No, that won't be how he feels, but that's the spot he
That got. Won't be the expression on his face when they show him not winning. But for me, you know, Lewis, Kaluuya, and Oldman are probably the three best, but Chalamet was fantastic.
I love that Chalamet performance. To me, Danny Day-Lewis is the best in this category
he's probably the best margin.
But I think I agree with you. I think Oldman's gonna win,
and I'm fine with that, but I do think this is unlike Meryl Streep. I think this was just another, and I'm not sure there is a down performance for Daniel Day-Lewis, but this was another elite one.
Yeah, agreed. All right, I gotta get out of here soon and we gotta do homework, so let's do Best Picture real quick. Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, Shape of Water, and Three Billboards. And
Lady Bird and Get Out and Phantom Thread are the three best movies in this category, and I feel very, very comfortable saying that. I also think history will bear that out pretty distinctly. I don't think any of them will win, but I do think the best of them for me was probably Lady Bird. I probably would go Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, Get Out in that order, although it's minuscule.
Yeah. Lady Bird was my movie last year, my number one movie. So I'm pretty.
I think it was my number two or maybe three, but that was favorite, not best. I think it was the best movie of the year, and I think historically we'll remember it as the best movie of the year. But I'm very confident
that's not going to
that
win.
I was going to say I'm very confident that those three specifically, Get Out, Lady Bird, and Phantom Thread, are the three that we'll look back on as the best.
I agree. But I think the three most likely to win are Shape of Water, Three Billboards, and Get Out, in that order.
I hope you're right that Get Out is in that bunch. I don't know exactly where the Academy will be on Call Me By Your Name, but I do think it's one of those movies that has a chance to be like a strange runner that people vote for because it's like the right kind of artsy thing to be.
I'd be stunned if that won, and particularly because it didn't get a director nomination.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. But I would agree that Three Billboards and The Shape of Water are the top two, and I hope you're right that Get Out's in there as well.
Yeah, Get Out to me is like the dark horse on the outside.
Those three, it's the best. Yeah. And again, I think when we look back, that will not be in question at all.
Yeah, and definitely no pun intended on Dark Horse there. Sorry. All right, Jesus. Let's.
I don't even know if anyone would have noticed that if you had to draw attention to it.
Let's get to homework because I gotta go.
Okay, I got a long ass list of stuff here. Okay.
Okay.
So, I'm gonna start you because it's going to be daunting when I list off all the stuff that's coming back in March. So I'm going to start you with the four things that I scribbled down that are like whenever we want.
Okay.
Three of them are on Netflix. One of them I think is already underway. It might be network. I'm not sure which. So let's start with that one because I didn't know this was happening, and I don't know how you feel about the film. But it's certainly a nostalgia poke, so I wanted to check in. Do you know there's a television Heathers?
I'm aware there's a television Heathers. It's coming on the Paramount Network, right?
Yeah, whatever the hell that is.
That is what used to be Spike.
Oh.
That is where Waco aired.
So those are two shows maybe we should think about.
I loved Waco.
Watched Waco.
I shouldn't say loved Waco, but I heartily enjoyed Waco.
Okay.
So yeah, if you want to watch Waco, I'm down to talk about it.
All right, we might need to get into Waco. I feel not quite maybe as strongly, but pretty good about a show I watched last night that I think we'll talk about next week called Good Girls.
Okay.
Which is a new Netflix, I would call it a dramedy, starring three delightful ladies. But before we get to that, these are three things on Netflix that we have not watched. Only one of which is brand new. Which we'll start there. There's a new movie called Mute coming out. Are you aware of this?
No.
Okay. Mute is a movie starring... is it Alexander Sarsgaard, who's the young one?
I lied. I'm aware of that. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Okay, so it's directed by Duncan Jones, who directed a movie I think we both like called Moon with Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I love
it. And it has a heck of a cast. In addition to Sarsgaard, it has Justin Theroux and Paul Rudd.
I'll check it out. I believe he's not the youngest Sarsgaard, by the way. I think there's one who's younger.
He's the True Blood one.
The True Blood, and what was the other HBO? Big Little Lies.
Thank you, man. Yes, correct. Okay, so that's something to consider. I don't know if it has to be this week, but putting it on the table, it did not do well on Rotten Tomatoes, for what it's worth.
Okay.
We have two dope queens. Are you aware that in addition to the podcast, they now have like a TV special?
I am aware. I have not checked it out yet.
Nor have I.
I'd be down to do that, I suppose.
Oh, that's easy. You don't sound excited.
I mean, I'm not excited, but I'm not excited. Is that, you know,
okay,
you know what
well,
I mean?
Let's back burner that for now. Let me test your temperature on watching two women of a different age and color. I keep being told that Grace and Frankie is really quite delightful. I have never watched it because, sorry, everyone, old people creep me out. That being said, I am already a previous fan, especially of Lily Tomlin, but also of Jane Fonda, and I've been told it's good enough that I think maybe we should consider it.
Okay, I'd rather watch Two Dope Queens. Can we do that? Let's watch Two Dope Queens. I have zero interest in Frankie and Grace.
Okay, well, Grace and Frankie is now off the table.
Okay,
now that we've gone through things we probably may not watch, here is a list of things that come back specifically in March, which we should now, I guess, add Waco and Good Girls, which have already gotten underway in February too.
Yeah, I want to put one more on the table that I haven't watched this yet. It's on my DVR, and I'm hoping to watch it, you know, in the next day or two. But AMC has a new show called McMafia that I've heard good things about.
Okay.
So right. I'll check out an episode before I say let's make that homework. But I do have my
eye on it. We'll sort out at some point during this week what of this is actual homework. But okay. These are all going to be toe dips anyway. I think. So people, we're not going to be spoiling stuff. But here's a list of things that return in March that we are already in on, I believe, that I think we will watch.
First was obviously Atlanta, right?
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Also, on Netflix, Love, Season 3 coming in March. Also, on Amazon, and we have talked about this off air, Sneaky Pete, Season 2 coming.
Yeah, we're running ads on 93X, and I was like literally tickled by it. Made me so, I don't know why. It just made me super happy. I'm like, oh,
I'm excited as well.
Yeah.
Also, Jessica Jones, Season 2, coming your way, March 2018. Also, Silicon Valley. I believe we're on to Season 4 now. I don't remember. Are you in on those two?
I'm in on Silicon Valley. I have watched a lot of Jessica Jones, but I don't know that I would be in for another season of that.
Really? Interesting.
It surprises you that much?
No, but I did think of all the superhero things you might be in on, this would be the one.
Yeah, no, it's closest to me, and I could see watching it, but just when you start talking about the daunting slate of stuff we have, that's going to be back burner for me. That's a binge when I can't really find anything to watch show for me.
Okay, now there is also, and this is just something we're going to have to figure out, there is like a small pile of new network stuff. Now, I don't know if we're really counting Waco or Heathers in that, because those are on this strange Paramount, formerly Spike channel. It's cable, but it's a little different. Here are a few brand new shows. There's a show called Deception, where a magician joins the FBI.
Hard pass.
There's a show.
I've seen a preview for that. That is a hard pass for me.
Yeah, it looks like the second bad ripoff of the USA classic Psych.
Yeah.
Here are shows that I don't know what the hell they are, but Rise is the name of a show coming to NBC. For the People is the name of a show coming to ABC. Instinct is the name of a show coming to CBS.
Can I ask why are you listing these shows?
I don't know. I'm just, I like, these are new shows that I thought you might have heard of and might be interesting.
If something comes to us and we hear it's good, then we'll pull it. But I think we can assume all of these are going to be crap until we hear otherwise.
There's an AMC show called The Terror. No idea what that is.
Yeah, no. Like, when you were like, Good Girls, I was like, oh, Christina Hendricks is in that, and Loretta from Parks and Rec. Like, okay, maybe I'll check that out. But until I have some more information, not jumping into these.
Good Girls is a Monday show, I believe, because at least I watched the premiere last night.
Yeah.
I should double check on that.
The reviews were not great, by the way.
The
reviews were not great, by the way, from what I saw of Good
Girls. Okay, I did not read reviews because I don't care. It is a Monday night show. Let's just say next Monday or by next Monday, see if you can't watch the first two episodes. I'll give you my 30-second review now. There's a lot happening in the pilot. I don't know. I'm not prepared to say whether I think it's going to be a good or bad show long term. I am prepared to say that the three leads of the show, who are, as you mentioned, Christina Hendricks and Retta, as well as Mae Whitman, who you may remember as Boring Ann from
Arrested Development.
Arrested Development. They are wonderful. And the sort of previews, the TV commercial trailers, just kind of give you a set it off vibe. And based on what happened in the first episode, I would say there's a little more of a Weeds or Breaking Bad vibe in terms of like where these characters are headed.
Except it's on NBC. So,
Well, right. So, I mean, that's what's going to be interesting. I don't know how seriously it's going to handle all of the things that it now is going to have available to it.
I'm
going to
spoiler alert and say not very.
Maybe, but I gotta say, all three ladies are a blast.
Yeah.
So it's got that going for it, and that's not going anywhere. So you know, you're not gonna get through it and be like, ugh, what a waste of my time. At worst, you'll be like, not much here, but that was enjoyable.
Yeah. All right. I mean, look, I said it was interesting, so I'll stay interested. All right, I gotta go. So
all right, get the hell out of here.
Let's
bye.
Get the hell out of here.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.